calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Tom Hartman program today. And Tom is taking a rare day off. I'm delighted to be sitting in. I'm Peter B. Collins, live from San Francisco today. And wherever you're listening to the Tom Hartman program, I am delighted to be connected with you. We've got a lot to talk about over the next few hours, and I invite you to chime in. This is a live interactive radio program, and it wouldn't be the same without your phone calls. So call me, 866-440-THOM. That's 866-440-8466, 866-440-TOM. And I want to thank the folks who made this possible today. Tom is attending the Bioneers Conference here in the San Francisco area, and it's rare for him to take a day off, but I'm always delighted to step in. Yeah, Tom is the hardest working man in talk radio, does 6 hours every day, and that's what I'll be doing today. It just gives me a taste of how hard he works and how good he is. So you're invited to join the conversation whenever you like. Steve Elson joins us first up on the program today. He served our nation as a member of the FAA's Red Team. His job was to go into airports and breach security to try to tighten up security. Steve, welcome to the Tom Hartman program today.
Thank you, sir. Good to be on it, and good to be talking with you again.
Well, I asked you on because you're well-informed and blunt-spoken, and I think at times like this, it's a combination that is really useful to the American people. Now, Steve, we just had another one of these hyped terror threats announced yesterday, and the media went wall-to-wall with it, even as they told us it was not a credible threat. Apparently, a couple of guys with computers in Milwaukee were having a little contest to see who could, build up a little fear wall right here as, real fear is sweeping the nation on a regular basis. And it really stings me that the media didn't check out the facts before they went public with this scary story that NFL stadiums were going to be targets of terrorist attacks as early as this Sunday. It was a hoax. And, this is crying wolf once again. And I can't believe that our authorities aren't being more careful about how they disseminate this kind of information.
Well, this is typically what's been done by our government. The whole thing is this environment of fear to try to get the government, the support it needs. Typically, going back to the Soviet days, when a country's threatened, people tend to rally around the leader. And, of course, if the election's coming up, anything that'll get anybody to rally around Bush and the Republicans at this point is certainly acceptable, an acceptable thing to do.
So, what's your take on this? Should people have been cooler-headed and said, well, look, we will release this information once we've, really ascertained that it's credible?
Well, absolutely. I mean, they were talking about the threat being on Sunday at football stadiums. Sunday's several days away, and I don't think there's a lot of people in the stadium, so certainly they should have checked out the facts.
I mean, it took them about 4 hours to figure out that this was a hoax, and in the meantime, it was like trick-or-treat night a couple of weeks early. Just amazing. Now, Steve, do you think that just to be on the safe side, that at stadiums this Sunday we should have a liquid ban?
I don't think we should have a ban at all. I'm at right now at Reagan National Airport, which I consider the most dangerous or sensitive airport in the country. I go to school there every day. This morning I got in early. I went up to Terminal A to have some coffee, and the lines are out the door. And it turned out, I think later, TSA had a problem with one of their X-ray machines, but I'm watching people stupidly taking liquids out of their bags. I guess they didn't know they were here because they're throwing them in the garbage and some guy's taking them up. But the very simple fact is, whether it's today or when we were in condition red right after the warnings from London, I'll guarantee that we could take explosives, be it liquid, granular, plastic, right through the checkpoint and not get caught because there's really nothing to stop you or catch you. So the whole thing's stupid.
Yeah. Well, and Steve, now that we've got a little distance, it's been almost 60 days since the London liquid bomber plot was busted up, and I believe that our government prematurely exposed this. These guys were not that far along. Many of them didn't even have passports, much less airline tickets, yet our government told us that this was an imminent plot ready to launch within a week. And we now know that that wasn't true, and there's a significant problem in the liquid bomb scenarios, which has to do with the triggers that are needed to cause these kind of homebrew chemicals to create a significant enough explosion.
Oh, you're absolutely right. They did jump the gun. You know, they'd have been smarter to wait right before the election so that they could have shown what a good job they did.
Well, Steve, they're going to execute Saddam. That's the coup de grace before the election. They want to get that death sentence and dispatch him, maybe even the day before the election.
Who cares?
So, you know, how should Americans respond? We're all being treated like sheep. I took a trip to Chicago a couple of weeks ago, and I had one of those mini water bottles with, I thought, under 4 ounces in there. And the TSA clerk there just said, oh, no, you can't have this. And I just think it's stupid to have the whole nation on an orange alert when it wasn't a serious threat. And there was never a hint that people were trying to get on domestic flights with liquid explosives.
Well, sure, it's stupid. And, you know, the thing I always have to remind myself is most of the screeners are good people. And they try hard. They are just simply lacking any kind of strong, intelligent, moral leadership. And, again, it goes back to the whole point. They can't stop liquid explosives. They can't stop any kind of explosives. And I know because I've certainly done some checking on this in the last couple of years. It's a complete waste of time. Now, what I suspect will happen, a few years ago we had the Chechenian women blow up a plane. All of a sudden the TSA went berserk, grabbing everybody's private parts and hassling them. But remember, when the holidays come up, things get really busy, and all of a sudden they begin to back off on these measures. So I think that's what we're going to see here.
We're talking with Steve Elson, former member of the FAA Red Team, here on the Tom Hartman program today. If you want to join us, 866-440-THOM. That's 866-440-8466. Now, Steve, I wanted to get your thoughts on the Woodward book, which revealed that there was this emergency unscheduled meeting where Kofor Black and George Tenet were driving around in Washington, and they said, this threat that turned out to be 9/11, this threat that we know about here in July of 2001 is so significant, I'm going to get on the cell phone, call the White House, and demand to see Condoleezza Rice without an appointment. And they did that, but she doesn't remember.
Well, I'm not a big condiment fan myself. You know, this is a woman who's reputed to be absolutely brilliant and have a photographic to near photographic memory. But if you've ever watched her testify, and I did at the 9/11 hearings in the Senate Hartman building, what's interesting, you know, I'm sitting behind people, so I like to look at people, I like to listen to them, and then I went out of the room because there's a TV set out back, and I like to watch their face and their eyes. So I like to get more than just the words they're saying. And it was interesting to watch when Richard Clark came. I was very demure. He looked down. He didn't talk to anybody. He sat down. He leaned forward. Yes, no, yes, no, yes, no. If you watch Condoleezza Rice, she never, like Bush, never answered a straight question. I remember at one point she said, well, I think perhaps at that time we might have thought. And I thought, what the hell did she say? And then I just realized she was lying, which is all she does. And this is a woman, as I said, who's supposed to have such a stellar mind and memory, and yet her memory seems to be faultier, God bless him, than poor Mr. Reagan when he was in the throes of Alzheimer's. It's just nuts.
Let's listen to Secretary Rice in dissembling mode.
The president quoted a British paper. We did not know at the time. No one knew at the time in our circles. Maybe someone knew down in the bowels of the agency, but no one in our circles knew that there were doubts and suspicions that this might be a forgery. Of course, it was information that was mistaken.
That was relating to the Niger uranium claim.
Right.
And I don't find that credible either.
Well, you know, I don't find her credible. And that, you know, it's a horrible thing listening to her talk. If you watch, I remember at the, I think it was at the 9/11 hearings, yeah, I believe it was Benveniste asked her a question.
Yeah.
And she asked her for a simple yes or no. But like Bush, as I watched several times this week, babbling on TV, you never get a yes or no answer. They just answer what they want, trying to keep from lying, but it's obvious that they are lying.
And
you also remember maybe that Condoleezza Rice, as well as Cathal Flynn, who was head of FAA security, where I worked at the time, each of them said in the media after 9/11 there was no way we could have foreseen terrorists using planes as missiles. Both of them had to recant.
Steve Elson, thank you for your work. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much, and hope your pastors or in your listeners will call their congressman and tell them to quit lying.
Thank you, Steve. I'm Peter B. Collins. A little traveling music from Jackson Browne here on the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Peter B. Collins, delighted to be sitting in for Tom today, coming to you from San Francisco. It's 21 minutes past the hour, and lines are open for you. It's 866-440-THOM, 866-440-8466. And I've got a question for you. Did you know that President Bush has declared this National Character Counts Week? So what are you doing to celebrate National Character Counts Week? President Bush went to Pennsylvania yesterday to support the re-election of Republican Don Sherwood, the man who says, yeah, I cheated on my wife, but I didn't beat my mistress.
Here we go, starting another war. We got our heads up our asses. You know, we're really bored.
In a bizarre TV commercial, Don Sherwood admits that he cheated on his wife. But he says the allegations of abuse were never true.
Turn on the nightly news. Hey, hey, we're Republicans. And people say we act like clowns. We just steal elections. Run the country into the ground. We're just trying to be greedy.
And as the Republicans celebrate the great characters in their party, they also have a concerted effort to tear down the character of a woman I have great respect for, whom I hope becomes the next Speaker of the House of Representatives. She's Congresswoman Nancy Pelosi from here in San Francisco. And in the interest of full disclosure, I once worked on a campaign for Nancy Pelosi. It was about 10 years ago. We're not in close touch at this time. And I have certain differences with her politically, some of it based on the compromises she has to make to be the leader of a disorganized caucus like the Democrats. That said, I strongly support her desire to become Speaker, because with it comes a lot of other benefits to progressive Americans. And we now see Media Matters for America did a great job of assembling the smears that are now underway being launched against Nancy Pelosi. And part of it is a smear on my adopted home city of San Francisco. I've been here for 30 years, and I love this town. And it is being used as a bashing icon. And I understand that. We're a liberal city. We embrace homosexuals and give them the same civil rights that we accord to everybody else. And this smear that's going on is aimed at both San Francisco and Pelosi. Here's Ken Melman on October 13 saying the Republican Party should focus on the dangers to America if San Francisco's Democratic Representative Nancy Pelosi becomes Speaker of the House. Weekly Standard, Fred Barnes, October 23rd. Barnes baselessly claiming that Pelosi is the most unpopular national politician in America, despite recent polls that show that Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld, Hastert, and Bill Frist are far less popular than Pelosi. On Fox, Fair and Balanced, Britt Hume editorialized in a news segment saying that Nancy Pelosi's not a popular figure or a respected figure nationally. Those are the talking points that they've been using. O'Reilly picked up the theme and said that secular progressive judges on the Supreme Court are more likely to come about if Nancy Pelosi and her crew control the House of Representatives. Bill, the House doesn't approve nominees to the Supreme Court. That's the Senate. Anybody tell you how that works? Pat Buchanan has piled on. He said that if we had seen Mark Foley's inappropriate emails or instant messages, we would have immediately acted to protect the kids. And Buchanan said that that comment showed a large element of hypocrisy from Pelosi. And this stuff goes on and on. And they also say that, here's one, Pat Buchanan. Pelosi has marched in gay pride parades with NAMBLA, who are pedophiles who are trying to get the laws repealed for sex between men and boys. And then he asked of Pelosi, if she's been marching with pedophiles, is she credible standing up there saying, I'm shocked that some Republican is after a 17-year-old page? Come on. It is a smear and guilt by association. Let's go to David in Richmond, Virginia. David, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Peter B.
Hi, Peter. How are you doing today?
Doing okay, thank you. What's up?
One of the things that I think has been overlooked, there's been a lot of discussion here about where our country's gone wrong, but to get back to the roots of it somewhat, I'm originally from Lynchburg, Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
And so I know Jerry Falwell, and I watched the Moral Majority come up, and I basically saw how Jerry Falwell and his ilk can take a town and turn it to their advantage and basically control what goes on in that town, both politically and socially.
Yeah.
And what the Republicans have done since the Reagan era was to take those issues that people like Falwell and Robertson and Dobson and whoever else are spouting about, and they say, oh, yeah, we'll support you in that, you know, oh, yeah, let's get these anti-abortion things going on and whatever. And they took a free ride on the fundamentalist right to get where they are today.
And David Kuo has told us volumes about that in his new book.
Yeah, I need to read that.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing of it is, I think that the country's at a point now where even the dumbest of us is getting an inkling something's wrong, seriously wrong. And the people who have been supporting the fundamentalist right need to step back and say, wait a minute, where are we going? What are we doing?
What David Kuo is advising, and I agree with you. Thanks for the call, David. Wish we had more time. I want to hear from you. 866-440-THOM. I'm Peter B. I could ride this one for a while. Nice bluesy riff. Not sure where it's from. It's from Shuffle on Tom Hartman's iPod. I'm Peter B. Collins, sitting in for Tom today, live from San Francisco. Your calls and comments are welcome, and the way I work is we don't screen your calls, and if you disagree with me, I welcome you to call the program. I love a lively exchange, don't believe in political correctness or sheltering people from opposing views, so if you want to talk about something, you bring it on. 866-440-THOM. That's 866-440-8466. 866-440-TOM. And you can email me, Peter, at peterbcollins.com. I'll check emails during the break, and I'd love to hear from you. My website is at peterbcollins.com if you want to get more information. And I want to give a shout-out to my friends and fans in the San Francisco Bay Area listening to the Tom Hartman Program on 960 The Quake in the evenings. Good to have you listening. One other of these items compiled by Media Matters for America in the attacks on Nancy Pelosi and my beloved San Francisco. On September 13, Ed Rollins, a mouthy Republican gunslinger, was on the Lou Dobbs Tonight Show on CNN, and he said, Nancy Pelosi comes from San Francisco, one of the bastions of lawlessness in this country, and therefore is certainly not going to be the one that's going to convince Americans that the Democrats are going to get tough on issues of national security. In 2004, an independent research company ranked San Francisco as the ninth safest of 32 U.S. cities. So reality is a sharp contrast to the world populated by people like Ed Rollins. And I'm amused by these attacks on San Francisco. But I want to hear from you, whether you're in Seattle or Pittsburgh or in the Green Mountain State of Vermont. What is your impression of San Francisco? And what is your perception of what the Congress would be like with Nancy Pelosi as the Speaker? She's a lot different from Dennis Hastert. and not just in the obvious physical ways. To your calls we go. It's TJ in Pittsburgh. Hello, TJ. You're on the Tom Hartman Program, and I'm Peter B.
Hi, Peter. How are you?
I'm great, thanks.
Peter, you wanted to see what the, a lot of America thinks of San Francisco?
Yeah, I want to know.
Sodom and Gomorrah.
Yeah, you ever been here?
It's a beautiful place. I'm talking about how the perverted lifestyle is possibly taking over that city, where most people don't see life as that way. And I don't think, and the homosexual agenda means trying to get people to accept the sinful lifestyle and shoving it down their throats that I don't really appreciate. And once they do that, then they can teach it to your little boys and girls in school.
Whoa, there's a lot there. Now, TJ, who do you claim is the author of the homosexual agenda? Where does that come from?
I'm not worried about it. I'm saying what you're trying to get the Democratic and corrupt the Democratic Party to think, and that this is what the Democratic Party stands for.
So tolerance and equal justice, is there's something wrong with that?
Equal justice for a perverted lifestyle? No, it's not equal justice. There's equal justice for people that are not being treated because
now,
of their
TJ,
race or something.
TJ, why do you describe it as a perverted lifestyle if a man is attracted to a man or a woman is attracted to a woman? Why does that bother you?
Romans chapter 1, sir. Just read it and you'll see what it bothers me for. I try to follow I don't follow my own lust and my own desires and live my life for my own self like a lot of people in San Francisco and other parts, but we're talking about San Francisco. I try to live my life in a proper lifestyle.
TJ, I respect that, and you're fully entitled to do that. Why do you feel that you should be able to impose your moral values on me?
I just don't want you guys corrupting the little boys and girls in this country
to think
perverted lifestyle is an acceptable lifestyle.
Well, I'm sorry. What is speaking volumes here is your insecurity, TJ.
Well, I don't think so at all. I'm very secure.
I have lived here for 30 years. And I have never had a gay person try to come on to me or persuade me to join their lifestyle. I support their agenda to the extent that let me finish. I support their so-called agenda to the extent that I support equal rights, civil rights, and non-discrimination. And if you find that agenda harmful, then there's something wrong with you.
I called my equipment and left that guy's house. What do you think of that?
I couldn't hear you. What?
I was so insulted by the guy coming on to me while I was working in his house, I grabbed all my equipment, left, and told him I'll see you later. Didn't do the job. So, please don't corrupt the children of the world.
TJ. The free expression of sexuality by adults doesn't have anything to do with your children.
Son that I raised myself, keep the
provider TJ,
back in TJ. The closet. Bottom line.
TJ, you're not very well informed because you're conflating gay sexuality, homosexuality, with pedophilia. And what we have now is this example of Mark Foley, and I'm not going to indict him or convict him here on a radio program, but the evidence suggests that he is a man who has a pedophilia problem, and he happens to be a homosexual. But the two are not necessarily related, and in the vast majority of cases, like over 95%, people who are homosexuals don't have any interest in being predatory, particularly on young children. And that is just a mistaken notion. You're entitled to your opinion, but I'm sorry, TJ, you're homophobic.
Which sounds a lot like blatant homophobia to me. Happens left and right. That's why we must unite. We gotta stand and fight. That old homophobia.
Let's go to Dave in St. Louis. Dave wants to respond to TJ. Hello, Dave. Welcome to the Tom Hartman program today. I'm Peter B. Collins.
Hey, Peter. How's it going?
Doing fine, thanks.
One thing for TJ. How many homosexuals come from homosexual families versus how many? I'm a straight white male. I'm married. I got two kids. And I teach my kids tolerance. I tell my kids what they, you know, if you're gay, then that's your lifestyle. That's what you choose to be. I don't know. I've never met anybody who is gay, and I've met lots of people who are gay that come from a gay family. Most of them come from straight families. I mean, look, Dick Cheney's daughter, she's gay, and I'm sure that's the biggest, you know, conservative family out there right now.
Well, Dave, I mean, that's a fair comment. First of all, we don't have that much experience with openly gay family units. And so some of that is new territory, and maybe we'll reflect back in a couple of generations and have a better idea. But it's true. You know, most of today's homosexuals, gays or lesbians, came from straight family units with two parents, a man and a woman.
Absolutely.
Thanks a lot for your call. Jerry in Pittsburgh, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. It's Peter B.
Hi there, Peter. How are you today?
Good, Jerry. Glad to hear from you.
Just want to say, first off, I personally, I have nothing against the gay lifestyle. I'm a straight guy. As far as the perception goes,
can we just say one thing here, Jerry? This term "gay lifestyle," the term "gay agenda," you know, those are loaded frames from the right wing perspective.
Okay,
and I just
want
to point that out. You can use the terms. I'm not going to ding you for political correctness. I just want you to think about it, because that's the way they describe it. You know, the gay lifestyle suggests that it's like owning a Lexus or deciding to have a hot tub in your backyard. It's not a lifestyle. It's not a choice.
All right. Be that as it may, I think the perception from a lot of Americans, this is my opinion, is not that they're is the saturation of gays in San Francisco per se, but it's the deviance that we perceive that goes on in terms of, you know, the type of sex that they have. You know, a man and a man or a woman and a woman living together and having sex in a healthy way and not a way that, you know, is anonymous in the bathhouses and mm-hmm. it spreads disease. And this kind of thing, and then the images that we see that come out of San Francisco has a lot to do with the perception.
I understand that, and you know, there are red light districts in almost every city in America.
Well, we're talking about San Francisco right now.
I understand. There are all kinds of sexual behaviors, and certainly San Francisco, you know, permits a broad range of them. I don't personally condone anonymous sex or glory holes or bathhouses, that kind of contact. And
right.
I do deplore that even, you know, after HIV and AIDS became so well known, that there are many, particularly young gays, who are willing to risk this kind of exposure. I don't condone that. But that doesn't mean that it reflects everybody in San Francisco. And that's what I reject, is that these comments from Republicans are designed to make it seem like, you know, this is Sin City, USA. And I'm sorry, it's just
way. I don't agree with that. And you know, there are some good things about San Francisco I wanted to talk about. The city is beautiful. I have visited with my family and the Japanese tea gardens. I think mm-hmm. that's what it's called.
Just You're right.
One of the most beautiful places on earth.
Well,
and,
I hope, Jerry, I hope you'll come back soon, because California is still in financial trouble, and we have this Austrian-born action movie star who's about to be reanointed as our governor. So we need all the help we can get, frankly. And I think that in many respects, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger is the icon that the nation should look at as the good and bad in California these days, much more than trying to demonize Nancy Pelosi. Thanks for your call. Now to Mike in Celebration, Florida. Hi, Mike. You're on the Tom Hartman Program.
Hi. Listen, all I've got to say is, what's wrong with Nancy Pelosi? And if all these guys are against her, she's my girl. I mean, I can't understand Hannity and Limbaugh and everybody. They're demonizing this girl. She must be standing for something good.
Well, I think Nancy Pelosi is a very bright woman. She's a very progressive person who has had to mute some of her own personal positions as she's moved up in the leadership. But I think that she is poised to take the Democratic Party in a very strong, positive direction. And
yeah.
I hope she becomes the speaker. And I think this sniping is only going to elevate her posture among progressives in the country. Thanks for your call. More coming up in a moment. 866-440-THOM. I'm Peter B.
Winding up somewhere, one step ahead on the high.
Hey, it's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. I'm Peter B. Collins sitting in for Tom today. Tom is at the Bioneers Conference here in the San Francisco Bay Area, and I'm glad to be sitting in for him. Also, I want to thank TJ for that call, and I'd like to get TJ a copy of Tom Hartman's new book, Screwed. I'll just leave it at that. A lot of great callers on the line. Let's go to Joan in Sacramento. Hi, Joan. Thanks for calling. Joan, go. Let's see. Joan on line 7. There you are. Go ahead.
Hello?
Yes, ma'am. Go right ahead. I'm listening.
Okay. I wanted to comment on San Francisco and the gay and heterosexual scene down there. I lived in San Francisco in the late 60s, which is a long time ago, and I'm straight. I met my husband there. We got married there. But our daughter is gay, and she moved down there from Sacramento maybe about 5 or 6 years ago. And was happy to be there at first because she felt comfortable there and she made friends, blah, blah, blah. But the commuting around the bay and the traffic and the cost of living, all these things have kind of worn on her.
Yeah.
And the other thing that she has talked to me about is the domination, if you will, of the male heterosexuals in San Francisco. She said it's just like a gay, a straight woman being in a male-dominated heterosexual society.
I'm not sure, Joan, if I agree with that. Maybe in terms of interpersonal relationships and inside the lesbian community, there is a sense that, you know, the male gays have more power.
Well, there
but,
is.
You know, Carol Migdon is a dynamic lesbian state senator. And, you know, she doesn't kowtow to any male.
I understand that. But I'm talking about my daughter's experience.
Okay, but is this in the work? Is this in the workplace?
Uh
huh. In the workplace or in the coffee houses? What's
and the clubs? You know, if there's a club that say is predominantly lesbians, all of a sudden, you know, gay men turn up and they kind of take over the club eventually, and it's more gay men than it is gay women.
Mm-hmm.
And she's noticed this a number of times. And she herself, of course, was brought up in a very good way, you know. She was our good child.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And
well, Joan, I got to move along here, but I appreciate the comment, and I don't present the gay community as monolithic and always happy. I think they deal with some of the same issues that heterosexuals do, and there are power issues. I'm certainly aware of that. Thanks a lot for your call. Let's see, Karen in Federal Way, Washington. Welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hey, Peter.
Hi.
Hi. I just want to relate my experiences in a couple of cities, including Pittsburgh. Wasn't TJ from Pittsburgh?
Yes, he was.
Well, okay. All I've got to say is thank God I'm not a spring chicken anymore because I was active in feminism in the 70s, 80s in Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I was going to do was liberate bars and go into a bar and drink beer if I wanted to.
Okay.
And I kept getting hit on by these hormonally active men all the time. And I mean, honest to God, I went into a bar in the middle of the day in downtown Pittsburgh, and I was, you know, and I, this guy came on to me, and I said, honest to God, what if the Virgin Mary came in here? And the guy says, if the Virgin Mary came in here, I'd hit on her.
Well, I don't know if there's any equivalence here, Karen.
But, you know,
I mean,
anyone who is heterosexual better not complain about the lifestyle of the gay people. That's
right.
All I've got to say until they start reforming themselves.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Karen. I appreciate that contribution. Now to Eldon in Indiana. Hello, Eldon. You're on the Tom Hartman program.
Thank you for letting me be on. I wanted to say I'm sorry that the Republicans have so much demonized the San Francisco. My concern is that Nancy Pelosi will not be tough enough, and that justice will not be done concerning the crimes that the George Bush administration has committed. Thank you.
Okay, I appreciate your comment, and I share some of those concerns. I am disappointed that Nancy Pelosi has completely taken impeachment off the table. I have mixed feelings about the practicality of impeachment, but I do believe that the Bush administration, and in particular George Bush and Dick Cheney, have earned the right to impeachment proceedings. Now, it's a whole set of practical issues about whether we really would want to go forward with that. And I do understand that the leader Pelosi has tried to take it off the table at this point so it couldn't become a Republican battering ram against the prospects of Democrats taking back control of the House. So I believe in accountability. I believe that John Conyers, if he takes over the Judiciary Committee, would certainly be open to impeachment or at least other processes of holding these people responsible for their misdeeds. And I believe that in her heart, Nancy Pelosi would support that. It's complicated by the leadership process and by the weak members of her own Democratic caucus. And that's where you come in. You can help hold their feet to the fire and make sure that they move forward and hold the Bush administration accountable. I want to thank you for listening to this hour of the Tom Hartman Program. We've got more coming up, so stay tuned and call me toll-free at 866-440-THOM. I'm Peter B. Collins.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
Tom Hartman is off today. He is attending and participating in what's called the Bioneers Conference going on here in the San Francisco area. And he tapped me to sit in, and I'm delighted. I'm Peter B. Collins. I host a West Coast syndicated progressive talk program. If you want to find out more about me, go to peterbcollins.com. And wherever you are, I'm really glad you're listening to the program today. Coming up next hour, we're going to throw open the phone lines and invite you to be the media. I'll explain, but be prepared to participate. Looking forward to that about an hour from now. Joining us at this moment is Professor Marjorie Cohn. She teaches constitutional law at the Thomas Jefferson School of Law in San Diego. And let me cue the orchestra here, because today Marjorie Cohn is being inaugurated or investitured or something like that as the new president of the National Lawyers Guild. Marjorie, congratulations.
Thanks, Peter. I really appreciate that.
Well, it cost a quarter to cue the orchestra. But here on a low-budget program, it's really worth it. And tell us a little bit about the National Lawyers Guild and what it means for a fiery progressive like you to take the helm.
Well, in 1937, the National Lawyers Guild was created because the American Bar Association wouldn't let blacks join. So the National Lawyers Guild was the first integrated bar association. And through the years, lawyers in the National Lawyers Guild have been instrumental in representing people who have been fighting for civil rights, labor rights, immigrants' rights, fighting against U.S. imperialism all over the world, women's rights, environmental rights, protecting gays and lesbians. You name it, if it's a progressive cause, guild lawyers are there side by side with the people fighting and struggling.
Well, and we need your work more than ever as police state elements have surfaced in our society. Many believe we have creeping fascism here, and it's represented by the so-called Military Commissions Act of 2006. And in the spirit of George Orwell and Karl Rove, Professor, I have renamed the Military Commissions Act the Joe Stalin Torture, Detention, and Kangaroo Court Act of 2006.
Well, that's very apt. What this Military Commissions Act does is to strip detainees of basic constitutional rights and make a mockery of the United States government's stated commitment to human rights. It denies the right of habeas corpus to non-U.S. citizens whom Bush has declared to be enemy combatants. That's unconstitutional. The Constitution allows Congress to suspend habeas corpus only in times of invasion or rebellion, and hopefully the Supreme Court will say so. The other thing that this does, and this has gotten very little play in the corporate media, it gives the government the right to declare anyone, including U.S. citizens, as unlawful enemy combatants if they are determined to have purposefully and materially supported hostilities against the United States. So anyone who donates money to a charity that turns up on Bush's list of terrorist organizations or who writes or speaks out against the government's policies could be declared an unlawful enemy combatant. This is very, very dangerous, and it should remind us of what happened during World War II when our government put in internment camps U.S. citizens of Japanese, German, and Italian descent.
Well, on my last trip to Washington, I accidentally walked through the area near Capitol Hill where the new monument is to the Japanese Americans who were interned in World War II. And I guess we ought to start budgeting and laying out space for a monument to the people who will be detained and mistreated under this new law.
Well, you know, something that's very disturbing is that the Kellogg Brown and Root, which is a subsidiary of Cheney's Halliburton Corporation, in January of this year secured a contract, a multi-million dollar contract, to build a huge facility at an undisclosed location to hold tens of thousands of undesirables. It talks about holding immigrants in an emergency basis and other new programs. And you wonder what those other new programs are, especially in light of the recent divulgence of by the government in response to the ACLU's Freedom of Information Act request, that U.S. military officials were investigating anti-war protesters and anti-military recruitment activities as possible terrorist activities. So yeah. Connect the dots.
Well, and this is a breathtaking expansion of presidential powers because the president is given the authority to determine who is an unlawful enemy combatant and to determine whether the Geneva Conventions will be observed in the treatment of that individual.
Absolutely. What it does is the bill immunizes Bush and his officials from being defendants in war crimes prosecution for any past torture and abuse of prisoners in U.S. custody.
Wait a minute, Professor. Isn't that amnesty?
It's called amnesty.
Aren't we against amnesty in all cases?
Only if we're scapegoating immigrants.
Oh, I'm sorry. I missed
that. And it waters down the list of war crimes punishable under the U.S. War Crimes Act. So non-citizens who are charged, tried, convicted, and executed in military commissions now can be denied basic due process rights, which apply not just to U.S. citizens under our Constitution, but to all people. The Bill of Rights is not limited to U.S. citizens. The government can use hearsay evidence, can use evidence obtained by coercion, and the accused can be denied the right to see all the evidence against him. And if you claim you've been tortured, your habeas corpus rights are cut off, so you can never go to a court and say, I was tortured or I'm being held improperly. You can stay there for the rest of your life, and you can never say the government's violating the Geneva Conventions because it cuts off any claims under the Geneva Conventions as well. This bill is a horror.
It really is barbaric. Now, Professor, if you could give me a little counsel here. One of my astute listeners, Debbie in Eureka, brought this to my attention just a couple of days ago. And then a listener named Tyler emailed me Article 1, Section 7 of the Constitution. And I'm just checking. It's still in effect, right?
As far as I know, it hasn't been suspended.
Now, this applies to the fact that the Military Commissions Act was passed in final form by the Senate on the 28th of September. The president did not sign the bill until the 18th of October. And in Article 1, Section 7, it says, if any bill shall not be returned by the president within 10 days, Sundays excepted, after it shall have been presented to him, the same shall be a law, in like manner as if he had signed it. unless the Congress, by their adjournment, prevent its return, in which case it shall not be a law. Did the president sign this in conformance with Article 1, Section 7, in your opinion?
Well, that's a very good question, Peter. The president gets 10 days to review a bill after Congress passes it, and if the president hasn't signed it after 10 days, then it becomes law even without his signature. But if Congress adjourns during the 10-day period after it passes a bill, the bill does not become law. The only loophole I can think of, and you better believe that the legal eagles, or should I say the illegal eagles, in the president's inner circle or clatch, noticed this because this was their bill, they wanted this bill, was that perhaps it was held up on a technicality. Perhaps it was not presented to the president outside of the 10-day period. Remember that signed, sealed, and delivered? There was a song, signed, sealed,
Stevie
and delivered.
Stevie Wonder, 1970, sure.
Right. So the clerk of the House of Representatives, who evidently recently resigned, possibly had not officially signed, sealed, and delivered the bill that Congress passed to the White House. That's the only thing I can think of, because otherwise this looks like what is called a pocket veto, and it is not really law, although it's just too much to hope for. There must be some loophole here, but it looks on its face like this bill is not law because there was a pocket veto, although I would look for a technicality.
Yeah, very interesting. Alex, let's hold a break for a moment, and let's talk to Dave in Los Angeles. Dave, join us here on the Tom Hartman Program with Professor Marjorie Cohn.
Hi, just both of you, and thank you for talking about the subject. I'm going to be somewhat tongue-in-cheek here, but I'm going to say that this bill, ironically, could end up being somewhat of our salvation. Should we get a Democratic president, and maybe even Nancy Pelosi, should there be an impeachment of both Bush and Cheney, this bill could be utilized to gather up the unaccountable elements, the neoconservatives, the Bill Kristols, all of these folks, and gather up these hidden fascists and collect them up as its last usage before being repealed.
You know, Dave, I think that's a wish, but I'll tell you something. We have to not only make sure the Democrats take back the House and the Senate, but that's just the first step, and assuming that the Republicans don't cheat and fix the elections. Then, if the Democrats take back the House and the Senate, we have to push them to do the right thing, because they have not shown much backbone since September 11th. Nancy Pelosi said, oh, we would never impeach the president, although John Conyers, who would become the head of the House Judiciary Committee if the Democrats take back the House, could initiate and has told me he would initiate impeachment proceedings. That's where impeachment starts, is in the House of Representatives. But the Bush administration has been very, very good at capitalizing on fear after 9/11 and has just terrorized the Democrats, and we really have to push them to be strong and stand up to Bush, bring the troops home immediately, and cut off the funding for the Iraq war. That's the only way it's going to end.
David, thank you for your call. And Marjorie Cohn, thank you for joining us. I appreciate your counsel and your strong statements. I fully agree with you about the nature of this bill, and I hope that people will build some outrage around it and not just forget about this. This is one of the darkest days in my life in American history. And congratulations on your investiture as president of the National Lawyers Guild.
Thanks so much, Peter.
Marjorie Cohn here on the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Peter B. Collins, live from San Francisco. It's the Tom Hartman Program. I'm sitting in for Tom today. My name's Peter B. Collins, live from San Francisco. We're going to go back to your calls here in just a second at 866-440-THOM. There are a couple of lines open if you'd like to join us. 866-440-TOM here on the Tom Hartman Program. And I appreciate the counsel of Professor Cohn. She really is spot on these issues. And I wanted to take a moment here to identify the Democrats in the Senate who voted for one of the worst pieces of legislation I have ever seen. And as Professor Cohn pointed out, we believe that the denial of habeas corpus is unconstitutional. But can we rely on a court with Roberts and Alito and Scalia to defend that right. Now, Scalia's on record in the past as being a staunch supporter of habeas corpus. But in the current political climate, we cannot rely on that. And so I don't have the confidence that Senator Specter, the Republican chair of the Judiciary Committee in the Senate, has. He voted for this and said, well, the courts will fix it for us. So here are the Democrats who voted for it. Carper of Delaware, Johnson of South Dakota, Landrieu of Louisiana, Lautenberg of New Jersey, Lieberman of Connecticut, former Democrat, Menendez of New Jersey, Nelson of Florida, Nelson of Nebraska, Pryor of Arkansas, Rockefeller of West Virginia. I cannot explain that one. Salazar of Colorado, former Attorney General at the state level, and Stabenow of Michigan. Now, I understand that Stabenow and Menendez and a couple of these other senators are in tight reelection battles. But Jay Rockefeller doesn't have that excuse. And even with the excuse, this is such a critical issue that I think it's inexcusable to be a Democrat and have voted in favor of it. Back to your calls we go. Let's see who's been holding the longest. Tom in Missouri, thanks for your call. You're on the Tom Hartman Show with Peter B.
Hey, how you doing, buddy?
Just fine, thank you.
Yeah, I'm a gay male. I'm 40 years old. The majority of my life, I was in the closet, as they say. I got married when I was 18 years old. I got divorced when I was 37 years old. And I'm a Christian. And I went to church every Sunday with my wife and my kids. And then one Sunday, they had a sermon about homosexuality. And the day I decided to come out is the day my preacher made a statement that AIDS is not a disease, it's a cure. It's a cure for homosexuals.
Oh,
and
geez.
I feel, you know, like I said, I just came out. I'm 40 years old. I've been out for 3 years now. The years I, you know, from being a baby to the age of 37, I never act upon it because mm-hmm. I know American citizens hate gay people. Like I said, I was gay. No one knew about it, and I heard all the bad mouthing, the abuse that gay people, you know, put up with, and sure. I didn't want a part of that. Mm-hmm. But when you know, the media calls them radical Christians, I don't call them radical Christians. I might call them radical religious leaders, but because they're not Christians. I was taught that you're supposed to hate the sin, not the sinner.
Well, and hate is not a Christian value.
Exactly. And I'm so disappointed in the U.S. You know, I'm American. Yes, I'm gay. I'm not a pedophile. Pedophiles, I think they should be lined up and shot. Straight men and gay men who are messing around with kids should be shot. And people need to stop putting myself in that same category with pedophiles. It's not fair. You know, I have a rough life like it is. I just came out. It's tough.
And Tom, help me out here. You're speaking figuratively, right, when you say they should be shot?
Yeah. I mean, I got
because, you know, shooting people isn't a Christian value either. I'll just point that out.
Yeah, I know, but I guess when I'm talking there, I'm not talking as a Christian. I'm talking as a father.
All right.
You know, I have two kids. I have a daughter and I have a son.
Well, Tom, I thank you for the call today. I want to squeeze in another before the break. Shana in Greenfield, Mass. Welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hello, Peter. This is Shana in Greenfield, Mass. Thank you so much for picking up my call.
You're welcome.
I'm a close friend of Rachel Maddow's, and I listen to your station every time I get an opportunity. I'll just try and make my points really quickly here because I know you don't have much time.
Go right ahead.
It was delightful hearing Professor Cohen on the radio. Although I looked at the congressional record regarding Article 1, Section 7,
mm-hmm.
it seems that they submitted the bill to Bush 7 days before he signed it.
Oh, okay.
So I think it's kind of
a he was in such a hurry, he had to have it.
Yeah.
Congress couldn't recess before he had it, and then he took his sweet time in signing it. I don't quite understand that.
Right. Well,
Shana, I got to go to the break here, so thanks for your call today. You can join me, too, here on the Tom Hartman program at 866-440-THOM. That's 866-440-8466. Email me, Peter, at peterbcollins.com. We'll continue after a short break here on the Tom Hartman radio program.
Oh, yeah, you really got me now.
1964? You really got me on the Tom Hartman program. You got me, Peter B. Collins, live from San Francisco. We're taking your calls toll-free at 866-440-THOM, 866-440-TOM. You like it all numerically? 866-440-8466. And we've had a lot of calls from people about San Francisco, the way it's being bashed by Republicans as a talking point, and they've singled out Nancy Pelosi, who would be Speaker of the House if Democrats take control in November. And we've been getting a lot of interesting reaction from callers to a fellow named TJ, who called citing the Bible and Sodom and Gomorrah and vilification of homosexuals who he thinks are a threat to his children. And KJ emails, Peter, thought you might find this insight helpful. I used to work on an Indian reservation and can tell you that Native Americans have an interesting and probably healthier take on the issue of homosexuality. It was, in fact, a non-issue for most of them. Among the Cheyenne of Colorado and southern Wyoming, for example, if a man at some point decided he'd rather be a woman, he simply donned women's clothing, assumed the role, and was accepted as such. The most beautiful form of acceptance was among the Cherokee, however, who originally lived in southeastern Tennessee, Georgia, and the Carolinas. And he, KJ says, a man who exhibited feminine traits or a woman who had manly characteristics was considered to be a two-spirit, a person with both a male and a female soul dwelling within. Among the Cherokee, such a person was held in high regard as being very powerful. Thank you, KJ. I appreciate that info. Let's go to Dave next in Eureka. Hello, Dave. You're on the Tom Hartman program.
Peter, I'm hoping you know more about this than I do, but your friend Brad Freeman is breaking a story on Brad Blog, and it is to the effect that the Diebold source codes have been stolen, and there's the fear that the ability to rig elections might fall into the hands of people that care about the people. And so have you heard anything on this? You will later.
Well, I'm plugged in and wired up here, and so I just got the same alert from Brad. He will be on my West Coast program in his usual Friday slot later today. He sent this dispatch. Washington Post is reporting in Friday editions that the FBI is investigating the possible theft of Diebold electronic touchscreen voting system source code in Maryland. And the Maryland Board of Elections admits the disk contained the software used in Maryland in the 2004 elections. Diebold is denying everything, of course. They gave their catch-all apology. The software is for versions that are no longer in use in Maryland. So you can get more information on this at bradblog.com. And also, Dave, tonight on the PBS series Now, they're doing a one-hour program called Votes for Sale. And I believe that's going to be related to various election issues, so that might be worth watching.
I like it, Peter. Thank you for all that you're doing.
Okay, and thanks for bringing that to our attention today. I appreciate that. I'm looking at the screen here. Jerry in Tucson's been on hold too long. Let's fix that. Jerry, you're on the Tom Hartman program.
Hello, I'm brand new to this forum, but I'm 53 years old. My partner of 8.5 years died 8 months ago. It's a female. And I find in my day that it's all about the right trying to control you, the government trying to control you, and I get tired of the bigots in this world trying to control homosexuals and trying to turn it their way. It's ridiculous. It's none of their business what people do in their homes and in their lifestyles.
Well, and the caller who prompted all this, TJ from Pittsburgh, I honestly feel compassion for. I think that he is mixed up. I think he's confused. I think he's living with a kind of fear of the other that he, you know, has a hard time processing. And, you know, I am disappointed that he expresses himself in the way that he does. But I have a sense of compassion for people who live in that kind of state of insecurity and fear about the way that other people express themselves. It doesn't have anything to do with me. If two men love one another, if two women love each other, it's not my business. And the fact that they do care about each other and want to make some sort of a commitment is something I support.
Well, you know, you can't make me gay. You can't make me a pedophile. I'm a heterosexual male, okay? But suppose you had a religion, suppose you told the religious people that you can't go to church on Sunday, they'd be up in arms. But they want to force their views on everybody else, and it's so wrong today. It really is.
Well, and as we've seen from this new book by David Kuo, the Bush administration has ruthlessly and cynically used the Christian evangelical political right in this country, and it's now out in the open for everyone to see. Will they get out of denial and actually understand the hypocrisy and the double dealing of the Bush administration? I hope so, and I hope it's going to be reflected in the results of this November's midterm elections. Thank you for your call today. Now let's see to Don in Seattle. Don, you're on the Tom Hartman program. Thanks for your call.
Friday, Peter.
Thank you.
Peter, I've been listening since 9 o'clock. It's amazing what you've covered in 90 minutes, 100 minutes. I can't even know where to start, but I'm going to try.
Okay.
As far as the gay conversation that is going on now in the country with Foley and the guy who talked, TJ, I have one thing to say to gay people. Black people have been fighting a long time to get where they are today, sir. And I say to gay people, keep the fight up.
I agree. It's a long-term fight, and you know, I really think that it's going to be interesting when we look back 20 years from now. We see the firestorm that was created over gay marriage. We see the way that the Republicans have, in this phony manner, suggested that it's activist judges who are to blame for the breakdown of our social fabric. And I'm sorry, the Republican hypocrites who pose as defenders of family values and moral values are all too often exposed for the cretins that they are.
Yeah, but Peter, it's very obvious to all of us now that in the Republican Party, no matter what your background is, in issues that is not on their platform. If you bring a lot of money to the table, you're welcome at that table, and they will overlook it. But I have one thing also to say, and I'll take your comment off the air, sir.
Okay.
I'm really surprised, my wife and I, that we're at this close to the election with all that has gone wrong in the country that everyone has seen as far as this administration, that we are so close to this election. We're actually on our on pins and needles if we'll even take back one of the houses. That is amazing to me. The Republicans are still have they've brought up now the gay issue and fear.
Mm-hmm.
As their talking points. And I'd just like to say one thing to everybody in America. Fear, we should be afraid. We should be afraid of more lies. We should be afraid of more liberty lost. We should be afraid of more of our soldiers dying. We should be afraid of the Supreme Court. We should be afraid of stolen elections. Afraid of a Congress that lies. A president and a vice president that lies to us. We should be afraid of a controlled press. We should be afraid of, I just can't go on it. I'll take your comment off the air, sir.
I can only agree with you, Don, and we'd probably add to the litany, but I thank you for a thoughtful call. Charles in Hillsboro, Ohio. Welcome, Buckeye, to the Tom Hartman program. This is Peter B. Charles, go right ahead. I can hear the noise there. Okay, we lost Charles. There's sound on the line, but he's not there. If you want to call back, Charles, be delighted to talk with you. And I'm just looking to see who's been on hold the longest. David in Blaine, Washington. Thank you for joining us here on the Hartman program.
Oh, good morning, Peter. I love it when you fill in. I'd love to hear you Monday through Friday, but I'll just take what I have right now.
Well,
but
thank you. Go to peterbcollins.com, and you can find out more about what I do.
Definitely. In response to the last caller, I don't want people to be afraid, period. We should be more ticked off than afraid of what these rogue political parties do, you know, with vote fraud, and they just sleaze their way into these positions of power like the Bush administration has.
Well, you make a good point there, David, and you know, one of the things that I'm really concerned about right now, and the reason I asked Professor Cohn to come on the program this hour, is that I really do believe that this Military Commissions Act
mm-hmm.
is a very dark turn in our country's history.
It is.
And I'm disappointed by, and I don't, by the way, blame, I don't believe that Karl Rove said, aha, you know, we passed this draconian measure, let's distract people with the Foley scandal. But it is a fact that just 2 or 3 hours after the Senate voted for this awful legislation, ABC broadcast the first story about Mark Foley's emails to Pages. And now that has taken over.
Yeah.
And while I'm not fighting it, you know, it's something that is clearly hurting Republicans and in turn will help Democrats this fall. To me, the Military Commissions Act is a much more serious issue that should produce outrage among every American. Mm-hmm. And instead, the outrage is channeled into, you know, sexuality and the whole scandal around the emails and this one individual.
I mean, the way that this administration and all these fascist regimes all over the planet use propaganda to really mind F everyone into confusing the conversation, and then of course the way the mainstream media has evolved in the last 6 years since Bush has gotten in there is appalling, because
it
prevents people from following, you know, the timelines, connecting the dots as easily. I mean, unless you're really reading all sources, which I try to do, and I recommend to everyone to just be open-minded and just read and just observe.
But David, to be fair, I blame the media and I blame our political leaders, but we also have to blame average citizens who appear to be more content to watch American Idol and the latest version of Survivor than to really pay attention to the damage that's being done by our government. And so citizens have to step up and take their share of the responsibility, too. David, thanks for the call. More of your calls coming up next year on the Tom Hartman Program, 866-440-TOM. I'm Peter B.
Come to decide that the things that I tried were in my life just to get high on. When I sit alone, come get a little known, but I need more than myself this time. Step from the road to the sea.
I'm Peter B. Collins sitting in for Tom today on the Tom Hartman Program, and Charles has returned from Hillsboro, Ohio. Charles, thanks for calling back. You're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call.
Oh, I hate it when you say that, Charles, but go ahead. I love it when you call. That makes my day.
Oh, right on. I just want to talk a little bit about taking control back of our government. Once we've secured both houses, or the House and the Senate, I'd like to think a little farther past that. And one of the things we have to do is destroy these laws that are a clear and present danger to our constitutional rights.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to set about prosecuting the criminals who are presently in charge and their cohorts or other war profiteers, and hold these people accountable so that we'll have some credibility on this planet.
Well, I think it starts with a couple of things. One is, I would like to see the American government acknowledge the mistakes that have been made in foreign policy over the last 5 years.
Absolutely.
Number two, we as Americans are entitled to know the truth, the real facts, about so many different issues, including the lead-up to the war in Iraq, the truth about 9/11, the aims of the Bush administration in its confrontation with Iran, who actually has been detained under the Patriot Act, why are they sweeping up documented resident aliens in certain parts of the country. And it just seems to me that there's a whole lot of fact-finding that needs to go on, and from there, we could lead to who's responsible, and I firmly believe that we need accountability up to and including impeachment. And I say that talking about the two processes of impeachment, that the House returns essentially an indictment for the crimes that have been committed. Then it's up to the Senate to determine whether or not to remove. I think most people learned that from the Clinton administration. And so I'd like to see the indictment take place. There's only 2 years, and so for practical reasons and timing reasons, it may not make sense to go through with a trial in the Senate. But I believe that impeachment by the House would certainly put Bush and Cheney on notice that we believe they've broken the law, and we want them to live within the Constitution until their term expires. So that's how I would approach those issues of accountability. Charles, thanks a lot for your call. Greg Gorman joins us now from the Talk Radio News Service. Hi, Greg.
Well, hi, Peter. How are you?
I'm doing great today. What kind of news is going on in Washington?
Well, there's a few things happening, and, you know, probably the newest is the White House briefing from today. Tony Snow is trying to change the focus onto Iraq, and you may have heard this. He's now calling, this morning, actually, Representative Murtha had a conference call with the press to say, look, we have to change the focus. We have to change our tactic in Iraq now. And a lot of people said that is because yesterday this report isn't out that said that, you know, the operation for us to keep Baghdad safer is a failure.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, now we have Skelton and Murtha and, you know, who are in the House who are saying, look, we have to change the focus now. You know, now's the time. So today at the White House, we've heard from Tony Snow, who's saying, look, so instead of talking about cutting and running, why don't we talk about walking and talking? And that's going to be the new catchphrase.
You know, walking and point, talking, huh?
Yeah, yeah. You know, at some point we are going to have to leave Iraq. It's not going well. Things are not going to happen. And this is, you know, most probably an unwinnable war in the terms of war. So now, you know, finally we have the White House trying to change the word and trying to look like, you know, they don't have their heads in the sand and they don't understand how bad things are in Iraq.
Well, and it appears to me that right after the election, this Baker Commission is going to try to provide cover for the president to make a pivot, but he keeps ruling out things like, you know, we're not going to leave and we're not going to permit the country to be partitioned. And that sharply limits the ability of this Baker Commission to, you know, present any kind of ideas that give Bush a face-saving way to shift the obviously failed policies.
Well, it's true. And, you know, I heard earlier today from the White House, actually, that the president is going to talk to his generals, and he's going to be in a few high-level meetings with his generals on the ground, and they are going to come up with some kind of solution, a new way to go in Iraq. What may happen, Peter, is the president, after all his rhetoric, and after all of Dick Cheney saying that things are relatively well in Iraq, you know, what may happen is the president may say, look, I've talked to my generals, here's what they recommend, and they know better than I do, and here's what we're going to do.
Well, you know, but the generals haven't been listened to over the last 3.5 years.
Exactly.
So maybe he'll send a signal that he's actually willing to listen to what they have to say.
Well, and Greg, that's what the news out of the White House is really about today.
All right, Greg, thank you for that update from Talk Radio News Service. Greg Gorman in Washington. Carol in Seattle, you're next here on the Tom Hartman program. Greetings.
Hello, Peter.
Hi, Carol.
My question is, is that this habeas corpus law that Bush just signed is one of the most horrendous things I think that this administration's done, and they've done so many bad things.
Yes.
But what I don't hear on the news media is that the House of Representatives and the Senate were complicit in putting this bill to Bush.
Indeed.
Now, I cannot abide Bush. I cannot abide this administration. I'm an older woman, and what's happening to America is just beyond the pale for me. But I want to hear somebody blame the House and the Senate as well. I mean, I'm not any longer saying I'm a Democrat, although that's how I'm going to vote.
All right, Carol. Carol, you just pitched me a softball, and I'll hit it out of the park for you. Okay, the Democrats were lame. And they allowed John McCain and Lindsey Graham and Senator Warner to fight with the White House over a narrow set of issues. And let's be clear, McCain lost. All right. Bush prevailed in that set of negotiations. And only after that did Democrats start to speak up. And they should have filibustered this damn bill. They would have only had to sustain a filibuster for 36 or 48 hours. And if they'd had the courage to do that, they could have blocked it and sent an important message to the American people about the difference between Democrats and Republicans at this crucial election point. And they didn't do that. Carol, thanks for the call. Sitting in for Tom Hartman today, I'm Peter B. Collins. Next hour, I'll invite you to be the media. Explanation coming about 6 or 7 minutes from now.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. And radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
It's the Tom Hartman Program, and Tom's not here today. He is attending the Bioneers Conference here in the San Francisco Bay Area, and I'm delighted to be sitting in for Tom. My name's Peter B. Collins. The B is there, so you don't get me confused with all those other guys named Peter Collins. And I host my own syndicated talk show based here on the Left Coast. If you want to, you can email me, Peter, at peterbcollins.com, and that's the website, too, where you can find out more information about my show and where you can hear it. In fact, it's on many of the same great radio stations that carry the Tom Hartman program, and one of those I will single out right now is KGOE in Eureka, California. And I was at KGOE up in the Eureka area on Wednesday this week. We did a live broadcast devoted to voter integrity issues, election integrity issues. And I want to thank all the people who came out to see us and participate in the event. And after our live broadcast, we sat back for a forum, just a roundtable discussion with members of the audience and members of the local media there in the Eureka area. And we had a great discussion. And I want to pay tribute to an activist in the Eureka area named Dave Berman, because he, in my view, embodies a lot of the great characteristics of people who love our country and who are fighting to take it back. And during the conversation, the evening media roundtable, Dave Berman made a really strong point, and it's the reason why I wanted to designate this hour as an opportunity for you to be the media. Because we were talking about the problems, and we've aired some of them out today here on the Tom Hartman program, that the media doesn't report key information that you need to be an activist citizen in this country today. And Dave Berman's response was a challenge to the members of the audience to be the media. And you can be the media by starting a blog, by shooting video and putting it up at YouTube or on your local cable public access channel. There are a lot of different ways that you can be the media. And in this era of corporate media domination, and, you know, the FCC is ready to give them even more concentration of power, it's important for people to get active and use the tools that are available. So this hour, we have no guests scheduled. I'm going to throw open the phone lines with this invitation to you, wherever you happen to be listening to the Tom Hartman program. I want you to be the media. Call up, and I'll give you about 90 seconds to tell us about a candidate or a campaign based on a ballot measure or other issues that you think are important in your community and that people around the country would like to hear about. And if you can be affirming, do so. Tell us about the exciting races where incumbents might be knocked off, where progressives are on the verge of winning campaigns with honest commentary about the war in Iraq and other key issues. Whether it's Sherrod Brown in Ohio or the woman who's opposing Heather Wilson in New Mexico, I'd like to hear from you on the races that you think are really important. Lines are open for you right now at 866-440-TOM, 866-440-THOM. And the other thing I'd like to ask you about that's based on my visit to Eureka is, how much are you paying for gasoline right now? Because the price spiked up and everybody, you know, screamed bloody murder about it. And in many communities, the price has come back down to about 2.25 or 2.40 is, you know, roughly the cost of a gallon of regular unleaded. In Eureka the other day, it was 2.89, and I had to pay over $3 to get premium unleaded. So I want to find out what pockets in the country are still being gouged by what I consider to be an artificial price spike. And we know there is no worldwide shortage of crude oil. Yes, the spot market has been way up in the $60 to $70 a barrel range, but that doesn't mean that every barrel processed in the United States costs that much. And the oil companies are, you know, reaping windfall profits, and some people are still paying through the nose. So, my invitation to you this hour, be the media. Tell me about those critical races where progressives have a shot this November, or ballot measures that you care about that you want to bring to the attention of our listeners. Try to keep it to 90 seconds, because if you were a real reporter, they'd give you strict time guidelines. And let's see how many calls we can take from different locations around the country this hour. And while you're on the line, give us a quick shot about what you're paying for gasoline in your local community. So be the media. Call the Tom Hartman program right now. And let's see, Roy in Rio Rancho, New Mexico is on the line. Hi, Roy. It's Peter B.
Hello, Peter B. Good to talk to you again.
It's been a while, my man. Nice to hear from you.
It has. We have a nice mess here in New Mexico District 1, Congressional District 1. It looks like our Democratic challenger, Patricia Madrid, is going to beat Heather Wilson.
It is looking good.
Not the least of which, Heather Wilson yesterday, rawstory.com put up the police file that Heather Wilson had hidden and covered up from her husband making inappropriate contact with a 16-year-old about 9 or 10 years ago.
Really?
And it has been bouncing around. We found out about it 2 weeks ago. There was an old Channel 7 video that had been posted up on YouTube from 1995 or 96, whenever it was. It has now been taken down, but now Raw Story has the actual police report scanned in, and it's going on all over, all around the net. So that's one thing that should just put some nails in the coffin.
So you're going to see a new Foley Gate right there in New Mexico.
I hope so. And what makes that particularly important, she was on the Page Protection Committee in the House for 3 years while this stuff was going on.
Hmm.
And there's, you know, and I could care less. I could not care less if she's really gay or not, but she's sure, the rumor is she's kind of maybe that'd be that way. And
well,
thirdly,
you know what, Roy, I'm not going to dip into that because
you know,
Republicans use those kinds of whispers, and I want to at least dream that we're above that.
I wouldn't care if it wasn't for the specific point that she's in. Now, and the other point along those lines is she is on the Intelligence Committee.
That's right.
That has now came out. You know, they were covering up for old Duke Cunningham.
Mm-hmm.
And this gal talks about the honor code that she was indoctrinated with when she was at the Air Force Academy.
Right. Yeah. All right, Roy, I want to move along here because I got a stack of callers, but I appreciate your point, and I'm hopeful that Patricia Madrid will be victorious there on November 7th in New Mexico. Up next, I want to catch up with Dick in Seattle. Thanks for holding so long, Dick. You're on the Tom Hartman program. Go right ahead. Let's see. I think we need line 8 there. Here we go. Dick?
Yes, Peter, I'm calling in to be the media to correct an issue you raised in the previous hour.
Go right ahead.
You expressed the Democrats who voted for the repeal of our due process were acting out of fear of terrorism. You know, I doubt that they were that stupid. What they were afraid of, though, was attacks by the Republican-friendly media and their vague and confused polls that mirror the media's complicity here.
Well, perhaps, Dick, perhaps I wasn't clear enough, but that was the point I was making, that it was political expediency and not any kind of principle that led these people to vote for it.
Well, you know, Peter, though, until we correct and create our own media and at least fund our own polls and our polling questions, you know, this sort of democratic political fear of confronting, you know, what they perceive as popular views, I think is going to continue. So that's what we need to change first. Mm-hmm. Need to get this, to establish our own media, but most particularly our own polling questions as well.
Well, and I think I would love to see exit polling conducted. It appears that we're going to have very little exit polling this November.
Not at all.
But we can't rely on the television networks to do it. And we need to find an independent, nonpartisan group that could conduct exit polling and give us that reality check we need. And it's an important check on the possibility of stolen or manipulated election results.
Yeah, I wasn't even speaking to exit polls, but that's a good point because they're not even going to be in existence this election because of all the media propaganda against it last time when the exit polls showed the elections were being stolen. And, of course, the media didn't want us to hear that because they pay the polling companies.
Well, and the same media brought us the breathtaking information from the Ukraine where exit polls showed that that election had been manipulated.
Well,
and
sure,
the U.S. used that as the basis to demand a rerun of the election in Ukraine. Well, hey, how about a rerun of the election in Ohio?
They got more rights than third world countries now. I mean, we didn't want the Russians to take control of that country, so we outmaneuvered them, just like they did down in Mexico. Now we've got less rights here than in these third world countries. It's amazing.
It really is. Dick, thanks for the call, and thanks for hanging in there for a while. I appreciate it. That's Dick from Seattle. Coming up next, we got a bunch of people who want to be the media. We're going to take your calls. throughout the whole hour here at 866-440-THOM, 866-440-8466. Email me, Peter, at peterbcollins.com. More coming up in a moment here on the Tom Hartman Program.
I heard a voice, I thought it was God. It said,
you're lost, man, and your system is lost.
It was so scary, I was so terrified. That morning I decided it was time to change sides. I'm a Republican now. Party elect. I'm a Republican now. I got red on my neck. I'm a Republican.
It's the Tom Hartman radio program. I'm Peter B. Collins. I never know what music's going to come up. I'm always amused by it. That's a killer tune. We're taking your calls and asking you to be the media today. Tell us about the candidate or the issue that's up for the November election in your community that you think people ought to know about. So you can be the media reporter here on the Tom Hartman program. 866-440-TOM is the number. That's 866-440-THOM, 866-440-8466. And Roy, thanks for that information about Heather Wilson. You can go to rawstory.com and read this for yourself. It turns out that Heather Wilson, before she went to Congress, served as the Secretary of New Mexico's Department of Children, Youth, and Families. And just 3 days after she got the job, she removed a routine working file alleging that her husband had engaged in inappropriate contact with a minor. The file was transferred to the department's attorney in Wilson's Albuquerque office, where it soon went missing. Raw Story has uncovered it. They've got a copy of the file. And it was a child abuse case filed in 1993 contending that Wilson's husband, a man named Jay Hone, who is an attorney in Albuquerque, touched a 16-year-old boy in a manner that was not welcome. Now, I don't know the specifics of the case. I certainly wasn't there in 1993. But this appears very damaging to Heather Wilson that she would have used her position as head of the Children, Youth, and Families Department to suppress an investigation into untoward behavior, at least an allegation of it, by her husband. So it's just the latest in Republican scandals, and I thank Roy for bringing that to our attention today. Let's go to Vic in Edgewood, Washington. Vic, you're on the Tom Hartman program, and I'm Peter B.
Yes, we've been working on the Darcy Burner campaign for the 8th Congressional District in Washington. She's trying to unseat Dave Reichert, a two-term congressman, and she's from a military family, and we think that anybody in the surrounding congressional district should try to come in and help her. And
let's go ahead and identify the dog in the background, Vic.
Well, you know, I have her phone, her...
her
campaign manager's phone number, if anybody wants to get in touch with him and help in the campaign.
Okay, well, let's not put a phone number on the air because I can't be sure that they want that. But is there a website for Darcy Burner that people could
I've looked
access?
And I can't find it.
Okay.
Well,
we'll remember the name Darcy Burner, and that's the 8th District in Washington State.
Yeah, she's neck and neck with him.
Great.
So we may be one of the seats we can turn over to the Democrats, and then
great,
we'll have all of Western Washington Democratic.
Well, Vic, thank you for the call, and tell me what you're paying for a gallon of gas right now.
Well, I haven't checked. It's come down, but I know it's going to come back up after the election.
Oh, you're such a cynic. Thank you for the call. Tom in Minneapolis has been on hold forever. Tom, I'm sorry. You're now on the air on the Tom Hartman program.
Good. Now, I want to express my outrage over the media's lack of outrage over the shameful Habeas Corpus Act. But before I get to that, I want to talk about this TJ caller who represented about the 20% or zombie American Taliban fundamentalists. Same brain, different uniform. I want to let him know that our elected representatives and our secular democracy, when taking their oath of office, place their hand on the Bible to uphold the principles of our Constitution, not the other way around. You get it? I am sick and tired of these guys. They're basically American Taliban, and I got some news for them. All clinical research studies show that over 90% of all convicted pedophiles are right-wing heterosexual males. He can Google it. I mean, you know, one word, Catholic priest, two words, hello. And so I just wanted to get that point first out, that this government is a secular democratic republic. It's not a religious theocracy. If he doesn't like it, he can go move to all those other theocracies in the world. He can look up the Republican author Kevin Phillips on his new book, American Theocracy.
Right. Yeah.
Now, my outrage. Keith Olbermann, you can go to YouTube on his special commentary 3 days ago about this loss of habeas corpus.
Mm-hmm.
Jonathan Turley, constitutional scholar, said, don't count on the Supreme Court because Justice Kennedy has already indicated that he's going to lean towards Bush. So forget about hoping that the Supreme Court's going to overturn it. We have to do something in the next 2 weeks to take back one of the chambers. And this shameful act is all about intimidating and squashing domestic dissent, right to assemble. That's what it's all about. It's going to go down in history, as Jonathan Turley said, as shameful as President John Adams' Alien and Seditions Act or even Hitler's Enabling Acts. That's what it's all about. And where the hell is the media?
Well, Tom, I share your outrage, and I gave you the opportunity to express it without interrupting because I wanted people to hear it. And I commend you for caring, for gathering the information to reach your position, and I urge you to infect as many people as possible with what you just said, because we've got to oppose what I call the Joe Stalin Torture, Detention, and Kangaroo Court Act of 2006. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Peter B. Collins. It's the Tom Hartman Program, live from San Francisco today. I'm Peter B. Collins, sitting in for Tom. He is participating in the Bioneers Conference here in the San Francisco area, and he'll be back live with you, as usual, on Monday. We're inviting you to be the media, and Peggy emailed me from Washington State. She said, Initiative 933, Property Fairness Act, is anything but fair. Contrary to claims it protects farmland, it will lead to the paving over of it. It would force us taxpayers to pay people to follow the rules or waive those rules. Millions of dollars will be spent by taxpayers to process, study, and possibly litigate claims. Small municipalities and counties won't be able to afford to pay, forcing us to waive protections. Now, I am inferring that this is one of those eminent domain ballot measures. We have one here in California. I believe it's number 90. And it was funded by a rich man named Rich. I think his name is Howard Rich. He's a libertarian who has been seeding ballots all over the country and providing substantial cash to support them. And this comes out of the Supreme Court's Kelo decision, where they took property, they permitted a municipality to take private property in order to do redevelopment work and build a hotel or something like that. And there are legitimate concerns about eminent domain. But these initiatives that have been spawned by Mr. Rich go a step further in embracing what is called the takings concept of conservatives. And that is, if a law is passed that prevents me from making money with my property, the government then owes me the money that I lost. And I'll just give you an example. If I own some property and I say, oh, I'm going to build a theme park, and then I find a reason why, due to government regulation, I can't build my theme park. Then I go to the government entity that prevented me from doing that, and I give them a bill. And I say, you didn't let me build a theme park, and I would have made $1 billion. So I want you to pay me that money. And the budget analysts here in California say that if this proposition passes, it would amount to a liability to state and local governments in the billions every year. Let's go back to your calls now to permit you to be the media. Let's go to Sean in Sacramento. Hello, Sean. You're on the Tom Hartman Show.
Hey, Peter. How's it going?
Just fine, thanks.
Oh, good. I just, you know, you brought up this sort of interesting, you know, thing of us being the media.
Yeah.
And one thing that I wanted to talk about was, I think that, like, maybe on your show or Tom Hartman's show, you guys should start having people call in with stories of things that have happened that the news hasn't covered. And I mean, not just political stuff on the voting fraud and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. But like about 10 years ago, my dad called me kind of in a panicked voice. He lives in Bellingham, Washington, and he was saying, have you guys heard about us down there? And I said, well, what do you mean? He goes, well, our river's on fire. And I went, what? And what happened was the refinery there had accidentally dumped like thousands upon thousands of gallons of gas into the river. It caught fire and killed a couple kids on the riverside.
I thought that only happened in Cleveland.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing is that it means just massive devastation. And the thing is it never came on national news. You know, and of course their argument is always, well, we have to carry stuff that's sensationalistic. That drives ratings. But the thing is that, you know, we know that's not true, because the thing is that what would be more sensationalistic than seeing, like, the video of a river fire?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, and that's the thing that's what's happened, is that the corporations are just protecting themselves. Every time there's some disaster going on, they say, here, look at the next blonde girl missing.
The latest on the guy who claims he was there when JonBenet died.
Yeah, well, or, you know, I mean, or some crime. I mean, I turned on my local news one day, and I saw this black and white video store, or the video surveillance from a convenience store of a clerk getting shot. I thought, oh, my God, what, you know, where did that happen? That's horrible.
Mm-hmm.
And it turned out it was a front story that the crime had taken place in Chicago. And yet it was on our local news as the top story.
Right. Hey, and Sean, thanks for being the media. What are you paying for a gallon of gas in Sacramento?
It's about $2.25.
Up in Eureka, it's $2.89 plus. So they're really getting squeezed.
For a regular?
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, like, why is it so expensive in Eureka?
I don't know the answer to that, but I was stunned when I filled up the other day. Thank you for the call, Sean.
Okay.
Also in Sacramento, we've got Bonnie calling, listening to 1240 Talk City, KSAC, and that's Sacramento's original progressive talk station. Hi, Bonnie.
Hi, Peter. It's great to hear you in real time.
Well, thank you.
I listened to a really great show of yours a couple of nights ago where you had Brad on and Deborah Bowen.
Uh-huh.
And that's what I'm calling about, because, boy, Deborah needs national coverage.
Deborah Bowen is a state senator who's the Democratic nominee for Secretary of State, and she really gets the issues about the vulnerabilities of our elections, from the machines to scrubbing of the rolls to prevent people from voting. And she's in a very tight race with an appointed Republican, a guy named Bruce McPherson.
Right, and he's got, I'm looking at their campaign, the total raise to date, and he's got twice as much money as she has, and which takes me to the other issue which she endorses, which is Proposition 89, the Clean Money Campaign,
yeah,
which is to get the special interests out of our elections and leave it to the people setting campaign dollar limits. And I think these are two really important issues in order for us to get our government back.
I certainly agree. Prop 89 is not perfect, particularly in the area of initiatives, but it is an important step forward in trying to reduce the amount of money in politics and relieve our elected officials from the obligations they have to the people who pay for their campaigns.
That's right.
And if we could do that, it would hopefully reduce the number of controversial issues that end up put on the ballot and turned into political footballs, because then the people in the legislature would actually be able to do the work we send them to Sacramento to do. Bonnie, thanks for your call. Good to have you listening.
Thank you.
Now let's go to Skip in Seattle. Hello, Skip. You're on the Tom Hartman program. Go ahead, sir.
Hi, Peter. I'd like to applaud you for carrying on the Tom Hartman message in the same vein he would do if you were there.
Well, thanks.
I'm calling to pile on, I guess, a little bit. I hadn't heard the whole program, but I guess the fellow TJ that called me the first hour, other people commented. But I would ask him this, if, as a single dad doing work in somebody's house, if the person who approached him was a female, would he have packed up his tools and left? Mr. Morrill there would have a fun time answering that question, I think. the other thing I want to comment on, it just really rankles me when I hear people say, when they spit it out, the phrase politically correct. Almost always, when you look behind their anger about that, it's a person who senses a loss of personal power. They can no longer use the N-word to put somebody down. And it's that kind of thing that makes me irritated. I don't think it's a good idea to call people the N-word. And I think our culture has finally figured that out. And when you talk about those kinds of things, about being politically correct,
if you think about that concept, when that person says politically correct, you know that's a person who's feeling diminished, and probably for good reason.
Well, usually people from the right who claim that political correctness is a problem object to having their hate speech limited or rebuffed.
Skip, and,
thanks for the call. I got a full switchboard here, and I just want to keep rolling, but I thank you for joining us here today. Eric in New York, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. I'm Peter B.
Hi, Peter. Thanks. I just wanted to briefly about taking impeachment off the table. I can kind of understand the reasoning behind that, but I'd like to bring up a point that Tom still brings up pretty often, that it's not something the Republicans can beat the Democrats up with, because a while back they were saying, oh, if the Democrats going to get in office, they're going to impeach Bush and this and that. And as you would think, logically, the Democrats' ratings would go up, so when the Republicans would say stuff like that, so they had to back off that. So I think that would, in a way, backfire.
I agree that Democrats should not be leading with the idea of impeachment. But if you go to impeachment,
I don't know why not. I mean, I understand why it's for political expediency.
Yeah, tactically, there are problems if you do that. But if you go to the website impeachpact.org, what they describe is moving toward impeachment by electing a Democratic/progressive Congress.
Right.
And I believe that there are many people who are bitterly opposed to this administration, some of them voted for Bush at least once,
mm-hmm.
who do recognize that if the standard that Bill Clinton was held to
exactly
permitted impeachment,
exactly,
then we should have a standard for the kind of actions that this administration has taken to bankrupt our government, to dish out these tax cuts to people who don't need them,
of course, and that's why Democrats,
and to lead us into a mistaken and unnecessary war in Iraq.
And that's why the Democrats' ratings will go up. That's why the Republicans had to back off that point, saying the Democrats are going to impeach. The Republicans have to back off that. But I just wanted to bring up Tom's point.
Mm-hmm.
And very briefly, I want to say, as far as San Francisco goes and Pelosi, of course, it's very unfortunate. You know, it just goes to show that all these people are not, it's not real media. They're just all getting their crap from the same tube, basically.
Right. Yeah.
And you know, I've never been to San Francisco, but, you know, it's the city that gave us Dirty Harry, you know,
uh-huh.
A great, great movie. So, you know, you can't go wrong there. Thank you.
All right, Eric, thank you for the call. I appreciate that. We're going to return and take more of your calls, inviting you to be the media. Tell us about a campaign, a candidate that you think is exciting and offers some hope for progressives. Bring it forward here. We've got room for a couple of more calls at 866-440-THOM. It's the Tom Hartman Program, and I'm your humble substitute host, Peter B. Collins.
Remember, democracy starts with you. Tag your ears.
It's the Tom Hartman Program. Peter B. Collins sitting in. Let's go to Jerry in Olympia, Washington. Thanks for holding, Jerry. You're on the air.
Hi, Peter B. I have one quick question. If somebody, you know, with all these researchers and everything out there, somebody compiled a chronological fact-by-fact record of the malfeasances and missteps and corrupt behavior of the Republicans and the Bush administration specifically since the last election.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, there are two places I would send you. One is to the website of CRU, Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, and their website is citizensforethics.org. And they have identified, there was a list of the dirty 13 Baker's dozen of the most corrupt people, and it's now been expanded. I think it's up into the 20s somewhere. But they do a great job. They're nonpartisan. They identify the people who are ethically challenged, whether they're Democratic or Republican. And I think that's a good place to go. The other place I would direct you is to Google Congressman John Conyers of Michigan. He published a report just before Christmas last year, which really could become the basis for impeachment if it ever took off. And it is a kind of blow-by-blow description of the misdeeds and lawbreaking of the Bush administration.
Terrific. Now, there is a race here that has been mentioned in Washington State in the 8th District A woman named Darcy Berner is running against Dave Reichert.
Mm-hmm.
She's a graduate of Harvard. She's a Microsoft employee. She's a mother. She's just a really strong, middle-of-the-road candidate, and she's opposing a guy who's basically a haircut with a dress cop's uniform.
All right. Listen, let me move along because we've already talked once about Darcy, okay. And I appreciate that, but I got a whole switchboard here, and I'm disappointed we're not going to be able to get everybody on. Let's go to Betty in Salinas listening to my flagship radio station, KRXA 540. Hi, Betty. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you, Peter B. This is the second time I've got to talk to you.
Well, good.
I'm calling regards. Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am. Go ahead.
Okay. I'm calling regards to I'm a constituent of the 28th Assembly District in Salinas,
mm-hmm.
and I'm also a constituent of the 15th Senatorial District. And first I'd like to talk about the 15th Senatorial District, of which I'm promoting Wiley Nickel, who's running for the Senate seat.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of agricultural problems here in Salinas. They're very serious. I feel like they're not being handled correctly by the, especially by the chair of the Agricultural Board, who is Denham.
Mm-hmm. Jeff Denham, yeah.
Especially the E. coli incident that's come up.
Yep.
He doesn't want to be proactive and go to those meetings that are desperately needed. The other thing, I feel Wiley Nickel is a very, very good candidate because he's out there listening to the constituents. And by that I mean with regards to the bad water quality that we have here in the Monterey County area.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the senatorial district goes from San Joaquin Valley all the way into Monterey County area. It is very highly agricultural. This is a very hot subject.
Mm-hmm.
The thing I'm referring to most specifically is the amount of nitrates in the water,
right,
which can cause methemoglobinemia, which is blue baby syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
If you mix this water with your infant's formula, you have a chance of the infant not retaining oxygen in the system. It's called blue baby syndrome. They could die.
Understood.
To a lesser degree, there's...
Betty, I've got limited time here, and I know you want to talk about the assembly race,
so
too.
I'm
go ahead.
Well, I'm promoting Wiley Nickel, and then for 28th AD... Anna Caballero. So we're out there walking, we're out there talking. Both of these candidates are highly respectful of the constituents' ideas. They're
mm-hmm.
ready to put forth work towards what's best for our country.
Indeed, Anna's a great candidate. So thank you, Betty. I appreciate your activism, and thanks for being the media today. All right, great to talk with you. Now to Dan in Eugene, Oregon. Dan, you're on the Tom Hartman program. Go ahead. There we are, line 8. Go ahead.
Hi, Peter.
Hi, Dan.
I just like to talk about the incumbent governor of Oregon, Ted Kulongowski.
Mm-hmm.
A Memorial Day passed. My dad, he was in the Death March, regular PLW.
Right.
Well, he was finally got his Purple Heart hit on him. About a month later, I got the chance to meet the governor, and I want to thank him. And I approached him and, you know, thanked him, and you know, this man was so wonderful, he actually could recite everything that was said on the Memorial Day of what father said, and truly, you know, encapsulated what my dad really is all about. And he's my true hero, is my dad. And I think my Kulongowski meets his shoulder height, you know.
Okay.
He's running against this, this fellow that he hides, his republicanism. And it seems they're all running, you know, away from Bush now, and unless it's, to their advantage. And also, we have here in Eugene, we have Vicki Walker and Chris Edwards, and Chris Edwards is running for representative, and Vicki Walker is running for state Senate.
All right.
And they're both. You know, all three of them are just terrific.
Great, Dan. Listen, let me ask you just finally, what are you paying for a gallon of gas there in Eugene?
About $1.34, $1.38.
Maybe $2.34.
I'm sorry, yeah. I wish, huh?
Yeah, you remember the good old days.
Oh, I sure do. I remember far beyond that, too.
All right, Dan, great to have you listening. Thanks for your call today.
Thank you.
And I'm sorry we didn't get to all the people who wanted to be the media, but go out there and make some news of your own. I have to quote Scoop Nisker, a famous Bay Area newsman who made that phrase up. But you can be the media, whether it's on the web, on the radio, on cable TV, or at YouTube.com. I want to thank Tom Hartman for inviting me to sit in today. Thomas will be back on Monday in his usual slot. I'm Peter B. Collins. You can find out more about me at my website, peterbcollins.com. Have a great weekend.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.